From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, March 9th, 2018. And on this day, the state's legislative watchdog agency will investigate the Department of Health and Human Services after the death of two children in Maine, allegedly at the hands of caregivers. And the case of a Lewiston dentist who's been accused of extreme malpractice is moving to court. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
The investigative arm of the legislature will review a child protection system that failed to prevent the deaths of two young girls in spite of previous reports of abuse. The Government Oversight Committee voted unanimously today to authorize a two-phased probe into the state's response in both cases. As Steve Missler reports, the investigation will focus on the Department of Health and Human Services, which Maine's Child Welfare Services Ombudsman said failed to allow, to follow proper procedure in several child welfare cases.
The Oversight Committee spent little time discussing its authorization of the investigation. In fact, committee members like Democratic Senator Bill Diamond of Windham needed little convincing that the probe is necessary. Diamond said he's heard too many stories about domestic and child abuse as a member of the Criminal Justice Committee.
You know what scares the hell out of me is kids being tortured right this minute as we sit here, and the only reason we don't know it is because they're not dead yet.
But lawmakers do know about 10-year-old Marissa Kennedy and 4-year-old Kendall Chick. Kennedy's body was found by police late last month after allegedly being beaten by her parents for months. Chick was found dead in December after being placed by the state in the care of a foster parent who was now accused of killing her. Maine's Department of Health and Human Services is believed to have had knowledge of the events leading up to both deaths. But the agency's handling of each case is unknown because it cited confidentiality laws, a move towards opacity sharply questioned by a former head of the agency in a recent newspaper column.
People are outraged.
Republican Senator Roger Cates co-chairs the Government Oversight Committee. He says it's clear that the system failed Marissa Kennedy and that it's up to lawmakers to get the answers to some important questions.
So what happened? Who reported what? What kind of communication was there between law enforcement, the schools, Child Protective Services, and how did the ball get dropped?
It'll be up to the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability, or OPEGA, to try and answer those questions. OPEGA is the watchdog agency of the legislature, and it's undertaken several high-profile investigations, including a corruption case that led to the conviction of the former head of the Maine Turnpike Authority and the shredding of documents explaining how public health grants were awarded by the Maine CDC. In this case, OPEGA will review how the Child Protective Services Agency within DHHS responded to the reports of abuse leading up to the death of the two young girls. Representative Patricia Hymanson, a Democrat from York, requested the inquiry, which also has the backing of legislative leaders.
If this happened to these two children, then what's happening out there now? And I think people are heartsick about that.
Hymanson co-chairs the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee, which has oversight over DHHS. And she's worried about flaws in the system and potentially a lack of resources at Child Protective Services.
The Child Protective workers are our first responders. They go into terrible situations and they get burnt out easily. And we have an 80% attrition rate in our Child Protective Service workers.
Hymanson hopes the OPEGA investigation will shed light on a system in a way that her committee cannot. She says information from DHHS is typically hard to extract, because Governor Paul LePage has restricted access to agency leaders and staff. In a recent interview with Portland TV station WCSH, the governor spread the blame across state government, including DHHS, the agency his administration has controlled for over 7 years.
It's a comedy of errors, both at DHHS, CDS, the mandatory reporters from the schools. I mean, this, the law enforcement, everybody here messed it up.
The OPEGA investigation will proceed in two phases. The first should be completed in early May. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Maine Board of Dental Practice today voted unanimously to send the case of a Lewiston dentist who is accused of putting patient health and safety in jeopardy to district court. The board already cleared Jan Kipex of 64 allegations, but more than 100 remain. The hope is that moving the matter to court will bring closure to a high-profile case involving more than a dozen patients. Patty White has more.
The frustration over a case that's dragged on for more than a year bubbled to the surface during the dental board meeting on Friday, when a member of the public asked to speak and was denied. As he stood up and walked toward the door, he decided to say something anyway about Dr. Jan Kipex.
He's a brutal sadist. A brutal sadist.
Outside the hearing room, Stuart Smith of Wayne says he went to Dr. Kipex 6 years ago for a tooth extraction. He says he told Kipex that his veins are hard to find and that Kipex should use a butterfly needle. But he says Kipex ignored his request.
Just jammed me up with a regular needle. I had a welt as big as a tennis ball on my wrist when I got done with the whole thing. And when I woke up, he was just kind of over me pulling my tooth and... There were dogs running around the office. I mean, the guy is, are you kidding me? How is this guy practicing?
It was last February when the Maine Board of Dental Practice temporarily suspended Kipex's license after receiving 18 patient complaints, resulting in nearly 200 allegations. The board considered 5 of those patient complaints last fall and found in favor of Kipex after expert witnesses testified that he had not violated the standard of care. On Friday, Kipex's attorney, James Bellow, asked the dental board to review the remaining complaints before holding further hearings.
And I'm not asking you to say these 13 complaints don't go forward.
What he was asking for, he said, was for the board to reconsider whether hearings are warranted on every single remaining complaint, given that it already cleared Kipex of the first batch it considered. Those first hearings, Bellow noted, took several days over the course of months. Undertaking 13 complaints, he argued, would take much longer.
What we're looking at is essentially, if we have 13 complaints, 5 took 6 days, that's 12 days. Add a few more, that's 15 days worth of hearing.
Bellow also pointed out that an oral surgeon now sits on the board who would be better equipped to review the allegations against Kipex, who is also an oral surgeon. But Assistant Attorney General James Bowie said it would set a dangerous precedent to allow Kipex to choose the complaint officer on his case. Bowie also reminded the board about the nature of the allegations against Kipex, that he extracted the wrong teeth, performed painful procedures before anesthesia took effect, improperly restrained patients, and continued painful procedures after patients asked him to stop.
I would submit you don't need an oral surgeon to make an assessment about whether these cases should be heard or not.
The board agreed with the state's arguments and denied the request to review the complaints before holding hearings. That decision left the board facing what would likely be a lengthy process. So hearing officer Mark Terrison made a suggestion: send the case to district court. Board Chair Lisa Howard noted that sending the case to court would eliminate the discomfort of board members essentially acting as judges when they don't have legal backgrounds. The vote was unanimous. As the case is in process, Dr. Kipex is still in practice. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Of all Maine's export products, one of the most logistically challenging is Homarus americanus. Fresh Maine lobster is now in demand all over the world, but it takes a lot of work to deliver the product to the other side of the planet while it's still fresh. In this installment of It Can Get There From Here, we visit a lobster dealer who's found a way to do it.
Lobster packing is a squeaky affair.
You get used to the styrofoam squeeze.
A crew of 5 people is stuffing live lobsters into boxes tail first, where they will ride upright, cradled in the styrofoam partitions like bottles of wine. When this box is full, it will contain 30 pounds of live lobster, part of a 3,000-pound order, that will be transported on a big plastic wrap pallet to any number of places.
Right now, they're packing an order that's going to be going to Asia. It's what we do almost daily.
That's Tom Adams, who opened Maine Coast Lobster in York just 7 years ago. In its first year, the company shipped about 1 million pounds of lobster to a handful of locations. Last year, it shipped 7 million pounds to 27 different countries.
France, Spain, Italy, Belgium, China, Hong Kong,
Adams
Korea,
has been in the lobster business for more than three decades, starting at age 15. After college, he worked his way into a sweat equity-based partnership in York, where he learned more about running the business side of things. And when he launched Maine Coast Lobster, he knew he'd have to compete with a lot of well-established companies for a share of the domestic fresh lobster market.
Which we did, but Asia, especially China, back in 2010, 2011, 2012, were really finding a taste for our lobster. And so emerging market, new company, it was a natural fit that we would grow quickly into that space, and we did.
Because of Maine's location on the map, shipping to Europe isn't necessarily any harder than shipping to California or Washington, so it made sense to do that. But getting fresh lobsters to Asia and ensuring they arrive alive and in good condition is a challenge. Adam says they need to be handled like eggs and flown from Boston Logan, JFK, or Newark, sometimes on cargo planes, but he also sends them on passenger flights.
It's extremely time sensitive. We ask a lot out of, you know, live lobsters to travel as far as, you know, Southeast Asia and China. And sometimes they extend to over 60 hours from the time we pack them to the time the customer receives them.
Ideally, lobster transit time should be more like 36 hours. But Adam says shipments are sometimes delayed by customs officials and arrive later, something over which he has no control. And there are other external forces that can affect his business, including a new trade deal between Canada and the EU. It makes Canadian lobsters tariff-free, which can make the Canadian product more attractive to European buyers.
It's tough to say. You know, it's still very recent, and we're still trying to understand what is the market really doing.
Alex Puge is one of those European customers. He brings the lobster to Spain, where it's eaten in popular seafood dishes like paella. He says while the 8% tariff on U.S. lobster is significant, there are also lots of other factors that buyers consider.
Canada is not very well organized logistically. Okay. So you cannot reach as many places from Canada on a daily basis and as fast as you can from the U.S.
And Puge believes that Europeans will continue to buy Maine lobster during the summertime when Canada's season is closed and their product is more expensive. Even if he does lose some European clients, Tom Adams says he's optimistic.
It will have its ups and downs like any business, any, you know, but I'm still very bullish on the lobster industry.
In February, Maine Coast shipped about 300,000 pounds of lobster to supply Chinese New Year celebrations alone. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, March 9th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.